Hello, everybody. We may as well begin. Cassandra Hayes produced a paper for the Institute for Public Relations, amongst other things, which I believe you teach at the college there, that's looks so bucolic and academic behind you.
Yeah.
And the issue was, of course, the recall vote for Gavin Newsom, which, you know, some of us have almost forgotten because we're on the opposite side. But in many ways, it's a sort of a prototype for all of the attempts at to turn democracy on itself by rallying so-called popular demands. And California is particularly susceptible to this because of its provisions for referenda and recalls and so on. And you know, as Hitler discovered, referenda are not always the best way to assess, well, that maybe they are the best way to assess popular will, as long as you shape the popular will before you try to assess it. Mm-hmm. And in your documents, with Gavin Newsom, there's very little evidence of anything, but an awful lot of smoke was generated from a very small fire. And he's not unique. I was covering the United Nations when the oil for food scandal came, and that was my prevalent idea, that there was very little fire, but huge amount of smoke, and I knew who was generating the smoke. But you mentioned the echo chamber. I mean, the danger here is that people become self-referential. So in the case of Kofi Annan, because the Wall Street editorial board carried it, Fox then picked up the story of the oil for food so-called scandal. And before long, CNN and MSNBC and all the others just took it for granted that these people wouldn't cover something like this unless there was a scandal. And I think that, you know, speaking as a journalist, one of the problems here is that we often report allegations without investigating the allegations, without seeing whether the emperor has any clothes or not. So in your particular case, could you detail what you noted about the Newsom debacle in particular? He won in the end, but I mean, it's always with a sort of sigh of relief when the good guys win. It's not very often in modern history, is it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it was a dark project to do for the reasons you describe. I analyzed using Brandwatch tool, which is a social media monitoring tool, over 1 million social media mentions about this election, just to kind of get a feel for the conversation. I was looking in particular to narratives, characters, plots, setting, and how they got twisted kind of as the conversation went along through different streams and different parties trying to promote things. And what I noticed that's particularly relevant to journalists is that, of course, there were this smaller stream underneath the big conversation of what I was calling dark PR, which is basically misinformation or just twisted out of proportion negative stories about, in this case, Gavin Newsom. And those were being spread by this stream of bad actors. That's bot accounts, that's influencers in extremist parties, that's like the other side, the people running against Newsom, spreading these things. And then journalists, because it looked like attention was getting made around this topic, the smoke was happening, as you put it, they started covering this. And so it legitimized what really wasn't a legitimate issue at first. And I also noticed, interestingly, that sometimes these bad actors focused on spreading misinformation would even use links to legitimate, what we would think of as legitimate news sources, not necessarily to back up their arguments, but to provide that sense of legitimacy to their, you know, wild conspiracy theories or whatever, their allegations toward Governor Newsom. So a lot of kind of depressing things going on in that election, kind of an echo after, of course, the big lie, as it's been called, in the 2020 election.
Well, being cynical in my youth, when I was involved in student politics and other things, I always, if I started a rumor, the test of a good rumor was when I could cite somebody else as the source of it.
Yeah.
Bounce back again. So, I mean, this is not new technology in that sense. This probably goes back to sort of Homer and Tutankhamun and others whispering in the ears. And then when the Grand Vizier comes back and tells them, oh, see, it must be true. He said so as well. So it's but it's the technology here, because when I was talking about the Oil for Food program, you could actually see the sources. You could, you know, you could get LexisNexis and you could check that this first appeared in the Wall Street Journal editorial section, and then it was picked up by Fox News, and then it was picked up by CNN and the New York Times, because journalists are A, very lazy, and B, they're reluctant to criticize each other, well, more so now. They are factors that should always be taken into account. And the journalists aren't paid anymore enough to do investigation. So it's much easier to pick a story up on Twitter. I mean, the idea of newsrooms filled with people checking the Twitter feeds of everybody else, I mean, this is, it's like reporting on candy floss. Forming, it's not substantial reporting anymore. But there's no money in it, because all the money has gone with the Twitter feeds.
Yeah, there's no money in it.
So what do we do?
People, yeah, there's not enough journalists anymore. So they pick up these stories and they kind of just spread the smoke rather than finding the fire, as you put it, which is a great metaphor.
Well, when in fact, there was an earlier case of this, I remember, also involved in the Wall Street Journal, with Clinton's pick for, I think it was Attorney General for Voting Rights, Lani Guinea. The story was started by bigoted people who never forgave her, and they put it in the Wall Street Journal and got Fox on the case. And then they went to Clinton and said, look, if you appoint her, this is the shitstorm that's going to hit you. And he deferred, but that's sort of directly impinging on one or two figures. It was directly addressed to somebody who is notoriously invertebrate in the face of opposition. But here we've got whole popular movements. I mean, to get a state the size of California to get a recall vote, and then, you know, okay, it was moderately comfortable, but almost get away with it on what was blowing smoke effectively. That's quite stunning. I mean, did you find out exactly who? Are there any particular technologies that are used for the robots and whatever?
I don't know exactly who. My study was looking more at the trends of the conversation. There were what I would say is bot accounts, where they're just repeating like the same message over and over again, kind of automated. I could identify those just because of the technology I had, the BrandWatch tool. And I could identify that there's certain influencers with large followings within these extremist communities that people kind of listen to and would say similar things all at the same time to drum up kind of controversy. I don't really know who exactly. I just wasn't looking at that. So I don't even want to speculate. But it was from the other camp against Newsom, for sure.
Well, you mentioned some ways of combating this, and it's Ronald Brin has just chipped in with a reminder that George Santos has taken a congressional seat by egregious fraud, which even his best friends are admitting was fraud. And I was quite taken how the GOP would take it. There are pictures of him on the internet now of him as a drag queen in Brazil, which, bearing in mind, you know, the main thrust of GOP objections, one of their thrusts for their bot wars has been the whole transgender issue. It's ironic, but how do you fight fire when the fire is not, is sort of, we can't see the sources of combustion. I mean, people are in a perpetual state of indignation, and it doesn't take much to stir the flames.
So what I would say to combat it, we always talk about research the sources of the message and think about the rhetoric logically. And my thought is, people can't do that for all the messages being thrown at us all the time. So I really am a big proponent, even in the journalist space, of really thinking of the emotion of the situation and having and developing an emotional intelligence. I feel like that's the only way to combat just picking up misinformation and spreading it and being rational in those situations. As for George Santos, I think that's just another example of certain people taking advantage of the fact that we don't have that emotional intelligence to realize when we're being stirred up and manipulated yet on social media. It's just another example of people coming to power using these kind of fake personas to get us extremist in our thoughts.
Well, so there are presidents who have got into power recently that way as well.
It would not just
an obscure congressman from upstate New York. you're talking about combating it. Now, you do mention a point that as a practitioner of political PR myself on occasion, that if you actually stand up to refute it, to rebut the allegations, you're giving them a second life sometimes.
Yes, you're repeating it because you're an official source, so you're legitimizing it just as a journalist would.
So that's something to beware of, is that you're suggesting that you combat it by tangentially almost.
Yeah, I am in. If it is misinformation, if it is truly a lie, I would suggest not repeating the lie, because anytime it's repeated, it gets new life. And that's what people don't understand as well in like social media. If you share something to like quote tweet it or share it to like talk back at it, you are participating in the anger that they're spreading, because all they're trying to do is spread anger. They're not trying to spread any kind of truth. So if it is truly a lie, if it is not a real situation, I would suggest, at least from looking at the conversation around Newsom, who did survive his election successfully, to not even repeat it. Instead, I would suggest combating the so-called connections that these conspiracy narratives try to make, right? So for instance, Newsom and the conversations I saw was often tied to Nancy Pelosi, and there was all this malicious intent tied to their connections and their relationship. Instead of like saying specifically that those lies were wrong and refuting them with logical evidence, I would just say, you know, there's no connection there at all to deal with. So that's what I would suggest, because these misinformation narratives really thrive on connection. And that's one of the reasons, like recently the Society of Professional Journalists magazine had an article about guidance on providing context for stories so that stories don't get used in misinformation. Context is really key in this as well, to combat that instead of repeating those lies.
It's a very difficult line to steer, though. I mean, you know, for example, I am no great fan of Hillary Clinton. In many ways, definitely not a fan. But at the same time, the stories about her were outrageous and untrue. Most of them, anyway. Not all. You know, the idea that a pedophilia ring was being run from the basement in Washington. But this is one of the issues that the trolls are using, and I don't think you're really quite addressing it. You're mentioning about making the connections. So for the base that they're addressing, you don't have to prove anything about Nancy Pelosi. All you have to do is to say Nancy Pelosi. All you have to do is to say Ukraine, Azov Brigade. And the saliva is running and the eyes are flashing from all the deranged conspiracy theorists, because they don't need proof. You just have to mention it. You know, it was getting the point. I mean, I've occasionally in my counterpoint pointed out that it's amazing how the accusations of Azov brigades being Nazis come so often from the people who signed the Hitler-Stalin Pact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, it's...
Yeah, they thrive through illusions now because the narrative has been built over time, right? So that's why I would say we need to develop emotional intelligence as well. Be very clear with context when you're sharing news. Don't repeat lies because that feeds the illusions more, right? More buildup of this so-called conspiracy in our government that they believe in. And we really need to do work in combating those illusions more than specific lies.
Yeah, but you know, the trouble is that sometimes the accusations are true.
That's true. That's why I say
even governments we support do collude and cover up and do terrible things, you know.
But I think they do need to be put in proportion. And that's why I say that dark PR, I like that term better than just misinformation, because it's not always just lies, right? It's sometimes just people spreading negativity are blowing things out of proportion rather than responding rationally. That's the problem. So I think it's more encompassing even than just lies.
Frank Gomez wants to know, how much analysis of the media took place during the recall process?
Analysis of the media.
Yeah. You were studying the social media feed. I mean, and you're mentioning that part of the validity was got because this was reported in the mainstream press, which was then construed as an endorsement and giving a substantial cause for the trolls to chop on. So,
well, I mean, certainly I think there could have been more during that recall election of the like news media. I looked at the social media, so I'm not totally sure. I know there was a ton of talk after the 2016 election about same stuff, but with that election, bigger election, obviously, with presidential media. There's that good book, Cyber Propaganda, about this exact issue over that 2016 election. Of this one, I am not completely sure. Would have to go to Google Scholar or something for the news media analysis.
Well, you know, one of the things I used to think it was exclusive to US rather than Britain, but people tend to be deferential towards their leaders. My president couldn't lie to me like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember people who opposed the war in Iraq, and I was being told by George Bush, I must support my president. And I thought this showed this possible superiority of the monarchical system, because I never said I must support my prime minister or must support my queen when I was in Britain. It was, you know, the queen very wisely does not get involved in such things openly anyway. So, you know, it's a case of a politically appointed official, the prime minister. But when you have a president or a governor, people tend to defer. And Americans are very deferential towards authority. American reporters, you just have to compare the, please, do you have any more wisdom to impart us style press conferences, American press conferences, with, you know, why is this lying to me? Which was, you know, the better British tabloid attitude, not right. Not prone to lying themselves. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, isn't this part of it, the whole attitude of questioning authority? And don't we need more little boys saying, but the emperor's got nothing on?
No, I think that's definitely true. We really respect the statesmen, right? The statesmen and women in our country. We really respect them because we vote them into office and we think that they have the will of the people or whatever. We're also taught as journalists in this country to, you know, trust official sources, that if you need something legitimate, trust those official sources. And there is a questioning, especially after these elections and what we're seeing, on whether to trust those official sources completely all the time. But I think it's a challenge because you have to kind of trust your institutions and at the same time question them in a way that's not going to just be destructive.
Well, I mean, this comes to the core of reporting on police, for example, is what the police chief says is always true. And if he says it three times, it must be three times as true as it was before. Even if the camera showed the poor guy being beaten up and someone stomping on his head, no, it didn't happen. The police chief says so, so it can't be so.
Yeah, yeah. And we're seeing, yeah, that we're seeing through videos that are spread on social media that that's not completely true. And that's another layer of challenge to this, is these bad actors know that the power of the people, and it seems like the people are talking and the people are rising up on social media movements, and they're kind of taking those tools to expose real change and manipulating them, right, to make it seem legitimate from the people. So that's another layer of complexity here, is they're kind of using those grassroots movements against ourselves almost.
I'm not a favor of legislative interference in journalism and free speech, but of course, this is the question of the ages with the social media. Do the publishers of this information have any legal responsibility? You know, I spent my early working years in Britain where libel was a very costly process. And you didn't even have to prove, the litigant didn't even have to prove that what you said was untrue. Just had to prove it was damaging. Well, of course it was damaging. That's why I said it.
Right.
No, but, you know, the truth was no defense in Brit. Whereas here, you know, I thought I was in reportorial heaven when they told me that you can't libel a public figure. Oh, yes, I can. Watch me. Not libel, but, you know, watch me go for them. But then I discovered, as I mentioned before, that many American media outlets will not challenge a public official.
Yeah.
Or do so in such a deferential way, you don't even notice they're being challenged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's another thing that's particular to the US, I think, or unique here at least. We really have, through the years, tried to protect free press. That's one of our biggest standpoints. However, you can question whether that's gone too far, especially with the spread on social media. I feel like we're trying to catch up and adapt our values, which are important, to this current environment, which is a very different ballgame, just because things are sped up and content can move so fast. So we do have to question if they're liable to the point that's not going to hurt freedom of the press, which is interesting.
Well, that's one of the most successful things that these people have done over the last decade or so, is to corrode any faith at all. I mean, this is beyond Tammany Hall. It was accepted in the fact that, you know, the mayor of New York was going to spread the jobs and the money around, and people are going to vote for him as a result. And in Chicago, dead people would get up and vote twice. But, you know, we've got to the point now where there's almost zero faith in the institutions, that when somebody doesn't even have to have, how should we say, tangible cause to say that an election is rigged. They just have to say it. And there are people who will believe it automatically because that's what they do, don't they? They rig elections. You know, the various dark forces in society, the people from Davos, the Zionist conspiracy, loads of people are all going to distort things. And it's taken for granted. This is the atmosphere we live. There's no civic bond anymore. They seem to have managed to corrode that completely. So they've won in a sense, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, they've spread negativity, right? And now we have to find a way to get it back. The positive view, the statesman view of civics, right? That we do what's best communally and for the country. And, you know, it's going to be a long road and it's going to be policies that adapt well to these technologies, and it's going to be conversations. And like I said, I think it's going to be a growth that we need in this country of having better emotional intelligence to be able to have different viewpoints in the same conversation and kind of know when your anger is getting stirred up and you're being manipulated and things like that. So I'm a professor. I believe in education as well. So hopefully that'll help as we move through.
Can we do it without guillotines and firing squads?
I would hope. I'm kind of a cynic too. You said you're a cynic. I would hope people don't have to get hurt, but we will see what happens. The storming of the Capitol did not ease my mind in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pleased to see them getting arrested, but I felt sorry for them. They were such dupes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, lions led by a donkey. Well, not quite lions.
Yeah, that's what I saw too in this study on the Newsom recall election, looking at the conversation, is that you have these bots who are obviously there for malicious purposes. You have influencers who kind of profit off of being influencers in these extremist spaces. But what was most, you know, dark for me was the fact that so many average Joes, just regular people, would then retweet and pick up and interact with all these malicious actors, kind of just brainwashed their narrative of the world through those. So we have to do something about echo chambers as well, speaking of policies and things.
Yeah, I've just bailed out of a conversation in which my correspondent declared that Finland had invaded the Soviet Union.
What?
Finland invaded the Soviet Union back in 1939, and the Baltics did. So, I mean, you know, facts are fluid.
I guess that's one way to put it. They're very fluid. Well, yeah, and they have an emotional truth to them as well. People want to be right. People want to do stuff and promote stuff that's going to correspond with their worldview. It's an emotional side to truth. And again, I feel like we haven't discussed that enough. I feel that that's lacking, and why people get brainwashed so easily in these situations.
Well, I mean, you can see it in other contexts as well. I mean, people will support a baseball team or a football team and say they're the best, even though they've lost every match for the last 20 seasons. You know?
Right.
There's a triumph of faith here, you know. And what happens in this case is the pro-Putin people believe that Russia has been historically wronged, and they're going to believe whatever Russia says. And similarly here, people are going to believe what the president says because everybody hates Americans, and he's, internationally, and little details like Vietnam, Iraq, and so on just percolate through. But one of the questions is, for those of us from California, this is Jonathan Kapstein, could you remind us of the vote results? And do you know how much money was spent? And can you identify the groups that spent it behind the recall?
I can't off the top of my head, but there is news articles out there about how much money was spent and the groups behind the recall. It is far right groups. And I think there was like companies and stuff. So definitely take a look, do some educated Googling to find those news articles that I can't remember off the top of my head. As for the vote results, Newsom won easily. And I think I actually
61%, I think I read off in your article.
Yeah, 60. Yeah. So people voted no 64.27%. People voted yes, let's recall him, 35.73%. So he wasn't even close as far as the actual vote. And that maybe is a positive note to this conversation and what I saw in the conversation online during the election time on social media, is that while these bad actors were driving conversations and peaks in the conversation, there was still that more full stream of people saying, you know, vote no on the recall, to not recall Gavin Newsom. He hasn't done anything to be recalled. And there were voices of reason kind of talking back, right? Because really all those misinformation people do is disrupt. They disrupt, they drive anger, and they drive division. And they did that, but Newsom did survive.
Well, one of the questions Simon Locke asks is, was there any indication that some of the recall social media was driven from outside the US? Because one of the interesting points here, you mentioned right groups, and the definitions don't seem to work anymore. you have people who would have been libertarian anarchists 20 years ago, but now sort of complaining about the deep state, except when it's on their side. And you have people who have spent 60 years as McCarthyites denouncing communist and Russian influence, who are now supporting a bloodthirsty dictator who's not even communist anymore. But they never mentioned that. So it's really, there seems to be I used the word before, fluidity about the political spectrum. I mean, what's left and what's right? Because a populist often uses very left-wing language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's fluid too, these national boundaries, because you ask if it was driven from outside the US. Well, I was looking particularly at posts that originated in the US. So I'm not completely sure, but I think I did that because there weren't much evidence of outside forces. However, we don't know if outside forces, you know, paid for the bots that originated in the US when they were online. Like, we don't know where that happened, what happened behind the fact. So
can you distinguish between a billionaire oligarch in Moscow and a billionaire oligarch in Leningrad?
Yeah,
in London.
It's hard to know on the internet always where stuff originated, the whole idea, because there is that still lost outside of the social media platforms conversation that I didn't have access to. So I didn't see any indication. That doesn't mean there weren't any.
So, I mean, amongst the technologies, people, is there any feasible way that bots can be sorted out? Because it's one thing to deal with, you know, deranged eccentrics stuck up in the Appalachians who have never quite got over the shock of losing the Civil War. And it's another thing entirely when you've got a computer sitting, this will get them stirred up. And mm-hmm. No, there should be a way to distinguish. I'm quite free of anything, you know. There
definitely is. And even on platforms, like I looked primarily at Twitter, after like these crazy elections, 2016 through 2021, they started trying to combat some of these things, and they did try to do that pretty well. One of those things they try to do is label when it is bot produced, when it's a bot account. So it says like automated bot account or something like that. And a lot of times they're harmless accounts. Like I follow one for some reason that's like posts pictures of possums every day. And so it's completely harmless. It's just funny to look at possums. But
whatever turns you off
helps. Like if it's talking about political stuff, I know that this isn't a human being. This is a bot trying to spread a message. So they are trying to do that on certain platforms.
I'll have to watch out for trends on possum elections.
Yeah, possum elections. The possums are just harmless and cute. So
politician of a different stripe.
Right.
I must say, I'd rather vote for a possum than some of the people I've seen on the ballot paper.
I know, yeah. Possums, dogs, can't go wrong.
So, but you know, a lot of people aren't involved in social media. And one of the problems with the mainstream media is mm-hmm. to look at a few vociferous lunatics. And there's an old French fable from Rochefort, isn't it, about the fly that was buzzing around the head of the cart horse, and he assumed he was pulling the cart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when he did this, the cart moved and it was the horse. So, I mean, there's this idea that a lot of journalists are looking at this buzzing from the blue bottles, the trolls or whatever, and assuming that they are moving things, when maybe they're not. How significant were they, and would they have had any significance at all without the mainstream media, you know, without the NBC or CBC or whatever coming out and saying, "On Twitter feed says blah, blah, blah."
Yeah, we have to be cautious to think that, one, that everybody's on social media, but also that everybody on social media is voicing their opinion. Like myself, I barely tweet about like anything political or anything like that. I don't voice my opinion that much on social media. And a lot of people do that, right? They just kind of lurk. They like what they like and then leave. So we have to be cautious in thinking that represents the true voice of the people or whatever. And it's the way to gauge what people are actually interested in. It's kind of a false assumption there. And one of the other reasons why we do have to be cautious on sharing these stories and these misinformation trends in journalistic outlets and giving it that legitimacy, because it's not accurate, right? It's not an official poll that has actually gauged things. And even polls are very hit or miss these days. So yes, I would just echo that sentiment that you do have to be cautious and you do have to wonder, you know, you're only spreading the smoke more when you report it on the broadcast news at night for people who hadn't even seen it that day on social media.
It's not very comforting when you think about it.
Well, again, I think we believe in free press in the United States, but we don't believe for some reason in public supported press or making sure to protect our,
The people who are behind a lot of this stuff have been deliberately strangling.
Yes, they've
public
tried media, to destroy it.
NBR, yeah. And, mm-hmm. WABC, all the other outlets, Pacifica, they've been thoroughly strangled and deprived of all public support. And I must say, back in Britain as well, the government has taken steps to make sure that the BBC is under very strong control. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to get a competing narrative into the BBC, for example.
Yeah, yeah. So we haven't done well at protecting our journalistic institution. So you read every day about cuts in the newsroom, people not funded as well, people not given freedom because they're so stressed covering so many different things. They're overstretched now. So we just need to do better at protecting this institution, I think, on the whole. People don't have time to not just retweet whatever's going on in the world on social media. They don't have time to investigate. So that's part of the reason as well. It's, I would say, a lack of time and resources more than a lack of knowing what they're doing is wrong or knowing what they're doing isn't good enough.
And people don't realize the consequences. They retweet something, not quite aware that they are rolling a snowball down the hill that could turn into an avalanche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but they don't put it in perspective for sure.
Yeah, you're feeding the beast. It's
you're feeding the trolls. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they love it. It's being rude to them doesn't work very much either.
No, because again, the point is disruption and spreading negativity and getting people kind of angry and involved in that manner, and engaged in these platforms in that manner. So the point isn't to reach some sort of consensus or find the truth. It's not like a good debate or anything like that. It's just people being angry at each other all the time. So that's the point. So yeah, I bet you don't get anywhere when you talk back to them, because they're not there for that. They're not there to have their minds changed.
A friend of mine who was one of the first professors of journalism in Britain, he resigned because he saw he couldn't sleep at night knowing that he was training these people for jobs that wouldn't exist and would be underpaid by the time they got there. So we have all these aspirant journalists around the world going to J schools. What particular courses do you think are lacking? Because, you know, generally speaking, the professors who do this are ex-journalists, and they tend to say, well, of course, the media for the state, we do the stuff, you know, it's above board and just the facts, ma'am. Even when they should know from their own experience that this is not very often the case.
Right. Well, how I sleep at night with what I do as a journalist professor is, I kind of think that really journalism needs to be taught way more Because journalism is the practice of pursuing the truth, right? And knowing the context.
It's a theory. It's a theory.
Supposedly, that's our ideal. And I think that ideal, even if it doesn't always get hit, is worth everybody knowing about, because that's what we're lacking in our society, is the ability to talk about the truth and protect it and pursue it. So that's one of the things that I actually think it should be taught more, our standards and our ethics, at least. I also think, and I think there's already a trend toward more of this, is journalists need to be better prepared to talk about data in an effective way, see trends in data, know when data is being truthful, because a lot of times, especially in political conversations, things like polling, journalists misrepresent or follow along with official sources misrepresenting data. And I do see a trend toward more data journalism being taught. And so I think that's important as well. And there is also more of a trend toward teaching things like putting that context in posts about journalistic articles, and even just ethics on social media in general. Like, I know I teach my students now how to behave on social media, when you can take sides and when you can't, when you need to put context in there and when you need to just post the facts without much comment, those types of things. So I think generally, hopefully, it's kind of trending that way. And even if there aren't jobs there for these students in journalism, I feel like the values of a journalist are going to help in whatever industry they go into.
You mentioned that. I mean, one of the things that there's the spurious objectivity, as you must have both sides. So this is the, we recently had a press conference with, I think it was a space foundation. We had a press conference about the NRA. It was about the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. And one of our respondents wrote indignantly, "You didn't put the other side." And my response was, "Well, look, we also recently had a thing about energy generation in orbit. I didn't get anybody from the Flat Earth Society to rebut it, because some arguments are just not worth rebutting." Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to give balance. It turned out on the Brexit issue, the BBC had trolled the whole field of economics to find an economist who would say that Brexit, Britain leaving the European Union, was a good thing.
Yeah.
The overwhelming consensus was this was an unmitigated disaster, as some might say, is now being revealed. But the fact that they had to get balance, even if it was the one deranged lunatic saying the end is nigh on the edge of the crowd, that's balance. That's not balance. That's an abdication of responsibility and objectivity, isn't it?
Yeah. I like the way you put it there. I think people have forgotten what balance is supposed to be, which is kind of more like fairness. For like two political candidates or something, less about let's find both sides of every single issue, even when there isn't really another truthful side of the issue. So I think that's another conversation going on in journalism right now, that both sidesism, and when is it still needed and when is it not, especially in this promotion of misinformation.
So do you have any other apercu to give everybody about what journalists should do and what journalist students should be taught?
Not really. I mean, I'll just end saying what I've been saying throughout. I feel like, yes, know your journalist ethics, but also develop emotional intelligence. And you do that by reading and learning about the world and being creative and responding to creativity and art and culture, rather than just always thinking of the facts as these very logical, rhetorical things. I think that long-term is the only way to kind of get out of this mess. And it's what gives me hope. So, and what I teach my students. So that's what I'll end on.
Mm-hmm. Well, since you've ended on it, I suppose that you've drawn a line under the briefing. Unless there are any more questions, I've got to thank you for I can't say inspiring. It's not inspiring. It's quite disturbing.
Yeah, I'm kind of a dark person. I'm sorry.
Although so am I. I mean, you know, if you think that's bad, you should hear this. You know, this is my line on things. I've always been a pessimist. I've always expected the worst and been very pleasantly surprised if it happens because I was right, and if it doesn't happen because I was wrong. You know, it's a good way to look.
I mean, I do have to say, I teach students of this up and coming Generation Z or whatever, and they are a little more open minded, I feel, than past generations. They do give me hope. So there is hope out there, hopefully long-term in the future.
Yeah, but as you said, there's a lot of societal training to do. Like Finland was invaded by the Soviet Union in 1939, no matter what you hear from your friend on the troll patches. And you know, it is that historical background which is often missing. And, you know, I think it's a very good thing for journalists to put this in there and to admit that, for example, in the case of Russia, the West totally mishandled Gorbachev's offers and the economic system trashed the Soviet Union, from which the Russians are only just recovering. And they resent us, even though it was Boris Yeltsin who introduced them, because I wouldn't listen to a Cambridge, Chicago-style economist. Why should you? But, you know, these are different perspectives on the world. Mm-hmm. So, thanks very much, Cassandra Hayes. Everybody, it's been a very stimulating discussion. I hope you all go back there, like I said, dispiriting. But stimulating, that's the word, yes. And I hope we can all go back and get more of this and look more onto the phenomenon of how what we think of as journalism is being driven by deranged people with aluminium foil helmets on in sideboards around the world. Thanks very much, Cassandra. Oh, next.